Good morning again, church. How's everyone doing? That was a wonderful, intimate moment of worship. Amen. Amen. I really enjoyed it. And we're going to have a little bit more after the message. So pray for me that my message will stay within the script. I really want to worship. I really want to be in God's presence. The goal of this series of messages, of being acoustic sessions, call it like that, is because we want to experience God in a simpler way, which is very possible, and it's actually very biblical. And the stories that we have been sharing so far, started with the disciples behind locked doors there on Resurrection Sunday, when Jesus came all of a sudden and he appeared in the middle and he said, I am alive. And starting that point, that was one very special acoustic moment for them. Then last Sunday, we also had an outside acoustic time when the two disciples on the road to Emmaus, they were encountered by Jesus. And one of the things that stuck with me was that after Jesus explained to them who the Messiah was, they hadn't made the connection yet that it was Jesus, the one talking to them, after this stranger guy had shared with them about the Messiah, they said, hey, why don't you stay with us a little bit longer? In fact, let's go and have some tacos and let's keep the conversation going because this is so good. So they had a meal with Jesus, and Jesus empowered them further for what was coming. And after a while, we don't know when, we do know that it's between Resurrection Sunday and the Ascension, which is about 40 days or so, Jesus had other encounters with the disciples, and one of those was very special, very meaningful, needed, was a must for Jesus to have, and it was with his leader of the 12, Peter, Simon, the unstoppable, impulsive Peter, the ear cutter, right? The one who was slower to run to the tomb. He was slow to run. So we find Peter all over the story, but despite his personality, we find a worshiper in Peter, a lover of Jesus' heart. And that's what the story today is about. So I brought Ashley, beautiful Ashley here. She's going to help me to read the passage today. She continues to practice her English accent. She's trying to match mine. So she's going to help us to read the story today.
So it's in John 21, verse 15 through 23.
Yep.
Okay. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus had asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, Lord, who is going to betray you? When Peter saw him, he asked, Lord, what about him? Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, "What is it to you? You must follow me." Because of this, the rumor spread that among the believers that this disciple would not die, but Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is it to you?"
Amen. Thank you. Thank you, Ashley. So the disciples at this point, like I said, they had already seen Jesus alive. This was after the resurrection. They had already seen Jesus behind the locked doors in the room somewhere. And so we have to assume, so the story is about Jesus and Peter. It's right there. So we have to assume that Peter already had an encounter with Jesus. We don't know if this is the second, third, we don't know. But he at least had one. And it seems like there was a need for a more intimate moment, more personal moment for Peter and Jesus. So I think it's fair to assume that even because of how the story develops, even though Peter had already seen Jesus alive, and I can't just imagine for a little bit, you know, you betray someone or you deny, you know, that you knew someone, and then that person comes to a Thanksgiving, you know, and you're just saying, oh man, the awkwardness of it. So let's assume a little bit of the awkwardness for Peter when Jesus appeared for the first time. There was excitement, yes, but it is awkward to know that you denied your best friend 3 times after you have said, "No way, Jose, I will die with you." And as soon as he had the opportunity to demonstrate that, you know, that promise, he said, like, "No way, Jose, I won't die with you. I'm going the other direction, Jesus." So I think there is awkwardness, but there is also conflict, internal conflict. Guilt, shame. What am I gonna do? Who's going to, you know, to break the ice? Is Jesus going to look at me and say, "Huh, you know what, you did it. We're cool." I can't imagine. I mean, we can speculate a lot about how Peter reacted to that first moment when he saw Jesus resurrected. But I think we could fully assume that he was in conflict. I did something, and that shame, that guilt, being the leader. Being the one who Jesus, you know, that in public Jesus told him, "You're going to be the leader." And just knowing like, wow, I wasn't. I was very impulsive and just, you know, I was ready to fight, you know, having a sword and ready to cut ears or heads, whatever. I think he went for the head. I don't think he aimed for the, "Let me cut your ear here." No, I think he went for the head. I think Peter was very like mad that evening. And then being graciously, but also toughly, is that a word, toughly? I just made it, copyrighted. Confronted, and also him himself. Man, I think I have a big mouth. I'm always saying, "I'm gonna die for you. I'm gonna do this and I'm gonna do that." But at the moment of showing that, probably not later. 3 times. So I think Jesus knew that Peter needed that encounter with himself, with Peter himself. With, hey, I think I have something here. I have something in my heart that needs to be worked and that needs to be repaired, healed, whatever that is. And so that's kind of a little bit of context for Peter and Jesus in this conversation. So he needed a more honest conversation for full restoration. So this story is about vulnerability, accountability. It's vulnerability, accountability, redemption, and purpose. So it's probably some of you say, "Okay, I want to hear the purpose part of it." You probably need accountability. You probably need redemption. You probably need more of vulnerability, and most of us hopefully will need all of them. So the disciples, before this story, they were out in the middle of the night. They had said, "Okay, let's go and catch some fish," and So they would do that in the middle of the night. And Jesus showed up, like at the beginning of their story with Jesus. He showed up somewhere and said, "Hey, what is going on, guys?" And said, "Well, we're here trying to catch fish, nothing. Okay, let's try the other side." So I think that was a signal, you know. And so that's previous to this story. So they realize it's Jesus. They jump, repeat it again. The first one, right, he jumped in the water and swim, while the other one's like, "Hey, why do you swim? We have a boat. We can just roll there." And you know, so and he was just so emotional. And like I said, he had a really bold temper, bold character, which was a good thing, needed thing for the ministry that he was going to do. So he goes there. Jesus grilled for them. And then in the conversation, they were walking somehow. They were walking. And Jesus had this conversation with them. He asked him three times, "Do you love me?" And Peter said, "Yes, I love you. And we can assume that Jesus had a plan here. So the plan was to redeem, to restore Peter. But to get there, there needs to be, like I said, vulnerability. There needs to be accountability and understanding how you're going to experience redemption, how you're going to experience restoration, alignment, healing. So the story goes, and he said, "You do love me?" And then at the third time, Peter said, "Oh, come on, Jesus. What do you want me to do? What do you want me to say?" And I think Jesus was kind of Jesus had a good humor. Playing a little bit with him, like, hey, you know, 3 - 3 = 0, right? So, and each one was a reminder the three times that Peter denied Jesus. And it's almost like, come on, Jesus, you know I love you. And okay, all right, let's then go to the next step of that conversation, which was, okay, since you love me, I want you to know that, your purpose is restored. Go and take care of my sheep. Let's go and take care of the church. Your purpose is restored, but also want you to know you're going to grow in two areas right now. In this moment, you're gonna go through those, but I'm going to tell you the two areas that you need growth in. The first one is, it's not going to be a fun ride. It's going to be hard. And to follow Jesus, there needs to be that acceptance. To follow Jesus, there needs to be this acceptance, like Jesus was saying, it's going to be hard. And he said, "I'm going to tell you a little bit of how you're going to die. How you're going to die." So he shared about it. And then the second thing is, stop comparing. Come on, grow up, Jesus. Peter, grow up, Peter. Stop comparing. So those are the two areas where Peter needed growth. And we can see how rewinding his story, we can see how he had those things in his heart that he needed help with. So 3 points for today's message where we're going to explore these things that I just mentioned. The first one is it is a story about grace, restoring, healing. But let's remember that grace is uncomfortable. Grace is uncomfortable. One of the things in our culture that we want to assume and to believe is that love and grace are just butterflies. Kind words, polite words. Don't if you cross that line, then you're being judgmental. You're being condemning. So the story and the way how Jesus does it is that we see that grace is uncomfortable, and we will see how. So Peter had to face his reality with an honest heart, because grace is uncomfortable. True grace will make us uncomfortable. Why? Jesus' three questions are a loving, confronting. So loving, confronting, the three questions are very crafty, very smart. Loving and confronting mechanism to help Peter face his guilt and shame. Jesus could have said, "You deny me. You blew it. right? But Jesus crafted the whole thing in a way like, you have said that you will die for me. Do you love me more than this? That was very intentional. Do you love me more than this? Verse 15, we see that. Do you love me more than this? That is, it's very powerful comparison. Not because Jesus actually wanted that, but he was, in a sense, being, okay, Peter, you told me that. Where are you with that kind of love? So, in that moment, Peter started to realize, okay, I know where this is going. I know where this is going, where the story is going. And at the same time, from Jesus' perspective, the whole conversation was going to land in freedom. From Peter's perspective, there was this uncomfortable sense of, man, you kind of putting your finger in the wound, starting to hurt. Why are you saying if I love you more than them? So very intentional. So the purpose of grace at the end is freedom. Grace meets you where you are. That is a fact. And we need to believe that. Grace will meet you where you are, but doesn't ignore where you have been. And that's what we want to believe. That grace is whatever, I love you, period. And that grace is all we need, yes. But however, the story gives us a theological, a very powerful teaching that, I need my hand here because someone in my house, a little one, keeps on doing the settings and it keeps, I need to keep refreshing this. So, grace will meet you where you are, but it doesn't ignore where you have been. We want to believe that Jesus doesn't care where we have been. He cares not for the sake of pointing our fingers or saying, hey, you blew it, but for the sake of healing. Grace and truth are needed for healing. Grace and truth are needed. Grace will grace will comfort and truth will confront. Both are needed. So pretending that something is not broken, that you heart, you need, your reality needs healing, pretending that it's not broken will not heal it. And many of us will prefer going pretending that there is not a brokenness that needs to be healed, whether at a personal level, relational level, and still expect that there will be healing, and that's not how it works. Jesus could have said in today's terms, oh, Peter, I know you're a nice guy, and I know your intentions are very good, and you can move on from that. Nothing happened. And being very kind, polite about it. But he was, like I said, lovingly confronting. So in our struggle with ourselves and with each other, we need to love by being willing to confront in a loving way. That's how Jesus did it here. So verse 17 shows that confrontation is needed for healing. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt. Just stay there. Peter was hurt. Sounds kind of similar to our pattern today. If someone says something to you, or gets your attention, or call you on something, you get hurt, instead of being humble about it. You get hurt, you get defensive. Who are you to say something? So Peter was hurt. Accountability and confrontation can be and must be kind, honorable, loving, and they are for the sake of restoration. That's the problem with some people. Some people love to call out people and being self-righteous about things. And they come across as judgmental. Those are the ones who have done a bad marketing for the church because they enjoy that. They don't care about being loving. They care about being right. So people out there don't want to hear what the church has to say because they are ready to say, you're coming to judge. So how do we then love our city, our community, and at the same time maintain Jesus' approach? Truth must be spoken. Is it possible that we can be confronting and at the same time loving? This story teaches that, yes, it is possible, and we need both. We can't change our society by just accepting and being okay and not being willing to engage in healthy, loving confrontation with what is happening out there. But we choose to avoid that because we don't want the bad reputation. So how then do we confront injustice, pain, sin, and at the same time being loving? I think Jesus did it right in this situation. He was loving because his goal was not just to call out sin. His goal was restoration. So if we start with that goal in mind, our conversation throughout it will transpire that desire to heal and to restore, not just to confront for the sake of I am better and you're wrong. That doesn't work. Jesus didn't do it like that. Who are we to change the method? The method is the same. We need to be kind, honorable, loving as we aim for restoration. So why was Peter hurt? I think because there were unresolved issues. We get hurt when people say something because we ourselves know that that is a reality of ourselves. So what people do most of the time when they are bothering us, they're just showing a mirror. Whether they do it with good intentions, bad intentions, at the end, if we get hurt, it's because we have unresolved issues. And what they are just doing is, hey, here's a mirror. And they don't know they are doing that. So when you get hurt, before you start being defensive, just go inside. Why am I being hurt? Peter knew I had an unresolved issue here. And I haven't confessed, repented, or talked to Jesus about this. I need to process this. I need to confess. I need to restore and renew my love. Do serious introspection and be real and honest about who I am. That's what Peter did in that moment. So he realized, I am being hurt. And Jesus crafted the whole conversation to get to that point for Peter to see, oh, I have an issue still. What was his issue? That he wasn't enough. That he didn't do enough for Jesus. His issue was that his mouth was faster than his heart. He would commit to everything, changing the world. But at the moment of being tested, he didn't match that desire. He was, like we can see, temperamental, hot-headed. And he was hurt because he knew that all that caused him to be in trouble. Why? Because he has said, I will not deny you. I will die with you. That was around John 14 at the upper room, a few days before this conversation. So his issue of his weakness, his need, was that he had this brokenness, or I don't know if we can stretch it a little bit and say he had a need for position, for stage presence, because he was always wanted to make sure that the other disciples knew that he was capable, that he was the one, the first one who had to say, I will die with you. Why would he say that? He wanted to earn that respect from the others and from Jesus. And Jesus is saying, all that is good if you do it with love. If love is the driver of all that. I don't think Jesus was trying to change his personality. I don't think Jesus was trying to say, stop being like that. No. Jesus was teaching him to channel all that energy, that character, that power, that strength, and to do it out of love. So he had unresolved issues with his own character. So the second thing, so the first thing is grace is uncomfortable. So we have to wrestle a lot. Jesus will put us in situations where we wrestle with ourselves a lot in order to receive freedom and healing. The second thing is that true love always obeys and serves. That is a straightforward lesson from here. Jesus doesn't expect less from us. One of the misleading teaching of grace is that grace is all we need. And yes, that's true. But that grace doesn't need anything else. Yes, that's true. But the problem is that in saying all that, we lean on the idea that there is nothing that I can do in order to worship and to please God. However, when grace is understood properly, the conclusion is that all is left for us is to love back. That's why Jesus asked the questions, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Three times. So true love always obeys. Peter said, yes, I love you. Okay, you're going to obey me, and you're going to do the ministry, the calling that I'm giving you to do, the assignment. You're going to fulfill the purpose why you were created. So he doesn't expect less from us. Love must be professed and acted upon. So when we understand grace, we act upon that grace. It doesn't end there. We think it ends there, but we need to act upon that. In John 14, 23, we see this. Again, this is a few days before this encounter, before the crucifixion. It says that Jesus replied, anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. So love is about obedience. Love is about obedience. In Matthew 10, even it's even more radical. Matthew 10, 37, it says something similar but more radical. It says, anyone who loves their father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Say that to this culture. Say that to you, Mexican grandma, and you will be without teeth right there. And then he said, anyone who loves their son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Do you see the seriousness of that question when Jesus asked Peter that? Do you love me? Who comes first? Where do we get that kind of love then that is superior to the love that we have for our loved ones? Where do we get that kind of love that is committed to the end? The love that Jesus expects from us. That kind of love comes from love. It doesn't come from legalisms or magic. It comes from experience of love. We can't give what we don't have. So how do we love Jesus? How do we answer that question, do you love me, to that level of being willing to say, my love for you, Jesus, is superior to any other love I have on this life? That is what Jesus expects from us. Doesn't mean that we stop loving our loved ones. That's not what Jesus is saying. It's what he's saying is, this is what is going to be needed in order for you to fulfill your calling. So that kind of love that Jesus expects from us comes from love, not from other places. So if Jesus, what Jesus means to you is religion or a nominal faith, or a set of behaviors, or a checklist, then that's what you're going to give to Jesus. So we can love Jesus back without his own love being poured out on us. So when we come to church and when we approach Jesus, and we do it out of tradition, religion, nominal faith, a checklist, this is what I had to do in order to keep up my faith, then there is not a chance that at the moment that we have, we were blessed that we don't have that here, but that we are tested at the level that Peter did and the level that the persecuted church is around the world today, there is not a chance that we're going to be faithful to Jesus if we come to him, because what he means for us is that he is a checklist. In order to persevere in our calling, we need his own love being poured out in our hearts. And Jesus did a lot of that with Peter. Peter was redeemed so he could be restored to his purpose. So true love translates into obedience and service. Verse 16, he said that, feed my sheep. If you love me, feed my sheep. Fulfill the calling, the assignment that I gave you. You might be asking, what is my assignment? And just look around you. Here's your assignment. First, your family, your community, where you are at work. That is your assignment. Those are your sheep. That is where you need to show that grace and love that Jesus had for the world. So if you love Jesus, then you will fulfill your assignment. So we were redeemed by love to love. And we do that through love. Can't do that out of our own strength. So we were redeemed by love in order to love, with the power of love. So by love, to love, through love. Love is the force that will sustain us in a healthy manner as we move forward. Because you can sustain your faith in an unhealthy manner, out of religion, out of traditions, out of fear. But love is the force that will sustain us in a healthy manner. That's why Jesus asked the question, moving forward, you're not going to rely on your titles, on your background, your ethnicity, nothing. You're going to rely on how much you love me. That's it. So moving forward, Peter, what is going to sustain you is that love that you're confessing right now here. So Peter had to embrace pain as part of his calling. That's part of the beauty of our calling that we don't want. So purpose in God isn't always fun, but it's always honorable. Verse 18 through 19 says this, very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Jesus said this to to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, "Follow me." So Jesus prophesied to Peter right there, "You're gonna die not in a good way. You're gonna want someone to hold your hand. Someone is gonna, you don't even have a right or control over that. Someone else is gonna do it for you." Some people take this and say that means the stretching of the hands, that he was gonna be crucified. And the tradition of the church says that Peter was crucified also, but not as Jesus did. Again, this is tradition. This is not from the Bible, but this is very standard belief that he was crucified, but he did it upside down because he said, "I'm not worthy to die like Jesus did. So do it upside down." And he died like that. But he knew at this moment, okay, I get what you're saying now. I get, I'm being restored, I'm being empowered right now through love, by love, because what is coming is not going to be fun, but it's going to be honorable. The culture there was a lot about honor. Our culture is not about honor. Our culture is not necessarily about honor. It's about whatever works. There was about honor, like the Asian culture. That's why bombing, and putting bombs around you and dying for other people, for the religion, and killing other people is so honorable for people. It is evil, definitely, but the driver is honor. So Peter was like, "Wow, I am being told by the master that I'm going to die like him. Let's do it." In our case, we're being, "Oh, no way. I don't want that." So for Peter was, yes, he was fearful, but it was honorable. Honorable was a greater value for him. So after that, the third principle. So the first one is grace makes us uncomfortable. The second one is true love obeys. And the third one is that we need to stay in our lane. So after that, I like that conversation. So we're going to go and read that really quick here. So after that, he said, "Okay, you're going to die like this." And then he said, "Follow me." So verse 20 says, Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. So you see here the tension between John and Peter. John is writing about Peter, and then he throws himself in the picture, the disciple that Jesus loved. You see that, the ego there in John? Like, I am the loved one. I am the loved one. So I want to make sure that when they're reading this, that they know me. I am the loved one. So he was also following them. So imagine, they're eating, they're doing the barbecue there, and then Jesus, "Okay, let's follow me. Let's keep talking. Let's go by ourselves." And then John is following them. I wonder what these guys are talking. And Peter again got that first conversation. That was for me. They had that tension among them. Again, honor, right? Status. And then he was following them, and then that's what Peter said, "Hey, this guy's following us here." So Peter, John puts that there. So this was the one who had leaned back again. John is throwing himself in the picture at the Last Supper and has said, "Lord, who is going to betray you?" And then verse 21, when Peter saw him, he asked, "Lord, what about him?" So what is he saying here? "You just told me I'm going to die. What about him? What about him?" That was a brokenness that we all have. What about them? Then Jesus answered, "If I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me." So that was such an embarrassing thing for Peter to hear. What is that to you? So the third principle that we see here for restoration and redemption, to experience freedom, is that we need to stay in our lane. Don't you, like, I think we know that when we start looking to the sides in other people's life, that creates bitterness. And a classic example is when you're driving and you just go, you know, you go in your Honda Civic and then you see this nice, you know, Lamborghini and then you start going, whoa, and then you crash. That's exactly what Peter is doing here. So stay in your lane. Don't compare. Stop scrolling for, you know, for what others are doing. That fills your heart of envy, jealousy. Comparison is not good. It damages you. It creates bitterness. I have done it. You guys want me to be vulnerable when we're talking about honesty? I struggled. I'm almost putting the past tense there, but I'm, you know, almost there. Because sometimes it's a present thing. You know, and it's my ego, right? It's my ego. By God's grace, I do this. When I see pastors that don't have an education, that they didn't do the job, the work, the heavy lifting, and then you see them with big churches. And you see their teaching, it's like, my goodness. Like, I want to go outside. I mean, like, just say, hey, don't listen to that teaching. That's bad. Not for me, because I care about good teaching. But it's just that you see the bad teaching that is happening. Prosperity gospel here and there. And I was like, that's not fair. That's not fair. What about them? And Jesus says, what is it to you? What is it to you? And I have had to accept that. What is it to me? What is it to you if God provides for others, blesses others? What is it to you if he says to you, you know what, because you love me so much, you're going to have the honor of suffering. So you have to deal with cancer. And through that cancer, you're going to glorify me. That's what he told Peter. He was telling that. He said he told him that so that he knew the kind of death that he was going to suffer to glorify Jesus. So when you feel bitter, resentful, looking to the sides, remember that question. What about them? What is it to you? Because it creates bitterness. It creates sometimes hate, comparison, and mainly doesn't allow to see Jesus for who he is. Because you continue wanting to edit Jesus' plans for you, and Jesus won't do that. Jesus won't edit. He will do two things. He won't edit the plan that he has for you, or he will let you do whatever you want to do without him. But he's not going to be with you when you are ready to edit his plans for you. So he will persevere until he knows that there is no turning around. And he will say, I'm going to let you do it. He will be ready for you when you're ready to come back. So comparison drains you, builds resentment, bitterness, and many other toxic feelings that poison your heart. Jesus said to him, all you have to do is follow me. Now, moving forward is between you and me, nobody else. What I do with everybody else is not your problem, Peter. What I do with everybody else is not your problem, Johann. You have enough on your plate. Just follow me and let's do this together. Peter had to grow. He had to grow in those two areas, his temper and his immaturity, to be like, what am I getting out of this? Is it worth it? So God can redeem your story and purpose. And it doesn't matter what you have done. That's the message from today. He can redeem it, but it will be uncomfortable. If you're willing to allow Jesus to redeem your pain, to help you and resolve your issues with you, within you, it will be uncomfortable. It's a law of nature. is a law of nature. For a seed to grow, it has to break. We have to break the ground. It will be uncomfortable. So don't, let's not be afraid of that. So in order for us to experience redemption in our stories, we need to face our reality with honesty. We need to recalibrate our love, the love that we profess for Jesus, and we need to stay in our lane. Let's worship. We're gonna worship some more, and we're gonna try to hold on to that teaching. Stay in your lane. Face your reality. Face your pain. Do not hide it. Face it. Do not hide it. And recalibrate your love. What does it mean to you when you said, I love you, Jesus? What does it mean to you when you said, I worship you, Jesus? Are those just words that someone else experienced as they were going through their own circumstances? Or are they also your words? And Jesus is asking us today, he's asking you today, do you love me? And if your answer is yes, he will say, then move forward to fulfill the purpose I have for you. Move forward and love your family, your co-workers, your neighbors, your church, the community that your church is serving. Those are our sheep. But Jesus is asking today, do you love me? And I'm pretty sure we all want to say, yes, Jesus, I love you. I love you. Some of us might say, I do want to say that, but I know there is something in me that doesn't let me do it. It might be guilt. It might be shame. It might be hopelessness caused by pain. And sometimes what we need is Jesus yelling from the shore as we are on the boat in the middle of the lake trying to catch fish with no success. And Jesus saying, hey, I'm here. Just throw it to the other side. And when you're done, please come here and let's eat together. Sometimes what we need is Jesus to initiate things, to draw our hearts near to his. So let Jesus do that. He took all the initiative in all the stories that we have studied so far for these acoustic sessions. He took the initiative. So let him do that. Let him love you today as he asks you that question. Do you love me? Recalibrate your love. Recalibrate your expectations, your dreams, and ask Jesus, okay, I love you. What am I supposed to do next? Stay in your line, in your lane. Do not crash as you look to the sides. Stay in your lane. That's a beautiful place where you are right now. So let's ask Jesus, draw our hearts near to yours. Thank you.